Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Crossover. Starring Josh Johnson and Chris McGill. Featuring Christina Thorson. And of course, you, the Instagram live chat. Now, sit back and enjoy this week's edition of The Crossover. Powered by Card Ladder.
There is
a screenshot.
No. It was Mo?
Oh yeah, I screenshot. I'll send it to you after this.
Nice. Alright, Mo, maybe I'll unblock you.
If you blocking you, you wouldn't even be allowed in the flag.
So what's the... I don't know, maybe Zuck doesn't want us to get too close.
Yep, Zuck put in a personal code just for that.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to The Crossover. Today's Friday, January 26th, and we start with mail days and announcements. And I have three mail days from since we last talked. Do you have any?
No, I do not.
Christina, do you have any?
No. Well, just three in your hand.
These are three nice ones too. The audio. What's wrong with the audio, bro? Ohio. While he says that, here are my three mailers. First one is the seventh Prism Black Finite 1/1 Christian McCaffrey, which keeps the streak alive. Number seven right there. All seven in the same PC. And then we have this by way of the Philippines. A Jokic 2021 Contenders Optic Uniformity insert. This is the gold vinyl, 1/1 parallel. And then finally, we have our second copy of Jokic's select rookie. And this is the gold parallel out of 10. So now we have two of these again. And it's nice having it in a gem mint slab. I think the gold label looks nice with the card. So there we go. Three nice mail days to end the mail day drought.
Nice. 7 for 7.
Yes. 7 for 7 indeed. Okay. Some say the audio is good. Some are concerned that it's cutting out. And Stiff says this is how it usually is. So sorry about that, guys. All right. And what about announcements? Do we have any announcements? Hardliner related.
I noticed that there wasn't, well, Chaz Pennysleeve actually messaged me and noticed that there was no way to get to Purgatory Sales from the native app anymore. So I fixed that today. Right. I'm not sure when that happened, but it's...
Yeah. Sweet. Shout out Chaz Pennysleeve. He has a question coming up in today's show as well.
Nice.
All right. Funny, Jim. All right. Let's get to some questions here. We have a decent number. First up from Pax That Slap, more of a comment than a question. The streak continues. Thank you, gents, for your service. I mean, look.
Sarcasm.
I can detect a sense of sarcasm on the comments coming through here. And, I mean, yeah, we've missed a few episodes over the last 6 months, but we probably had periods of like years where there was maybe only one or two missed.
Yeah, this is probably the most consistent card show, longest running card show in the hobby, right?
I don't know. It's up there. There are some others. There are definitely some others that predate us. Tip of the hat to our friends Wax Museum, 90s B-ball cards on YouTube, some others. But yeah, we're coming up on 4 years. It'll be 4 years in a few months here.
Anyone That's, if it's not enough, this is my reply.
Yeah, we'll see how long we can keep this streak going. I did notice, though, there was like a flood of people in our comeback episode. So, yeah, maybe there's something to be said about going away for a few weeks and then coming back.
Yeah.
For some people. All right. Mick Wildcat. So we have our first episode title. All right, good. Mick Wildcat says, and this is becoming topical because of the season that we're coming into. Do I have to pay taxes this year?
No, the government said this year everyone's exempt. 2023, you guys are good to go. See you next year.
Joke. Disclaimer. Disclaimer. That is sarcasm. Please go and see your tax professional. We do not give advice. Thank you.
Yeah. Tax professionals, whether it's H&R Block or CPA, have been always very surprisingly affordable, in my experience, ever since I started using one. They are not like crazy expensive.
Yep. And since I got into cards, I went with like a nicer firm to do my taxes, and it's actually paid off. So like I would say that if you put money into it, you'll usually get more out of it. So don't try to skimp on it. It'll actually cost you money, in my experience.
All right, this is obviously going to be a big topic here. From JGP45, he says, let's talk about Championship Sunday. Mm. And Drake PC says, let's get some weekend NFL playoff predictions. So I don't think the lines have moved too much. The Ravens were a 3.5-point favorite the last time I checked, and the 49ers were 7. Okay, the Ravens have moved up to 4. The Ravens are now a 4-point home favorite. And the 49ers are a 7.5-point home favorite. So
there's a lot. That means that the betting action is moving on the Ravens.
Yeah. Yep, it's moved on both. So the Ravens opened at -3, and now they're all the way up to -4.
Yep.
And the 49ers opened at -7, they're up to -7.5.
Yep, that's a lot. Are we making picks?
Yeah.
I just got to say, I like last weekend better. Two games on Saturday, two games on Sunday. This, we just get the two games on Sunday. Less games, never better. But obviously, more on the line in these games. All right, let's. Which one are we starting with? Can we just make both?
Yeah, just go ahead and go both.
I'll go with the Niners and the Ravens. Let's go with the favorites this year. I think.
Are you picking against the spread, or are you just picking win?
We're going. Well, spread. Yeah. I feel like the Ravens will win by a field goal, so I'll go Chiefs to cover. Win Ravens to win. I don't like doing the spreads. I like just picking. I'm not a gambler.
Okay, then just pick the winner.
Yeah, Ravens Niners.
Okay, you like the Ravens and the Niners. I'm going to go Chiefs and Niners because that's who I'll be rooting for. So we'll just keep that simple. I wish, Josh, that they had put one of the games Saturday night. And honestly, the NFC game should have gone Saturday night because that game is not as anticipated. And
yeah.
Then put the other one Sunday afternoon.
But they put the one seeds on Saturday so that they have the extra day advantage going into their already advantageous game at home on Sunday. And then they want the two teams that win on Sunday to have the same exact days of rest going to the Super Bowl. That's why they do it.
Very good point. Yeah. All right. Well, let them keep their advantage.
2 weeks. Who cares?
Yeah. I don't want to go Saturday with no football.
Yeah. I wanted to flip the two games. I wanted the Chiefs Ravens. I thought that was a primetime game. Have that be at night.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You know.
No, it totally should be. It's just time zones. The 49ers are Pacific and the Ravens are Eastern.
True.
But the NBA slate tomorrow is very good. So you have Heat, Knicks, 76ers, Nuggets, Clippers, Celtics, Pelicans, Bucks, Lakers, Warriors, just Kings, Mavericks.
Wow.
Tons of good NBA games tomorrow. All right.
The Mavericks team can suck.
All right. Is that at home?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Get to see them lose again. All right. Show Busy Living says, is the hobby really down? The Dallas card show was popping. Let's discuss card shows versus the data that we see on selling platforms.
Mm-hmm. Well, I posted it to my story. I don't know if you have recently posted your story. I know what you've messaged me about it, but the CL50 is up 16% in the last month. Wait, sorry, 14%. Let me pull that around. So this is over the last month. CL50, 14%, which is a lot. And a few people have reached out asking how they can look at the specifics of that and the breakdown. So if you just go to cards, you can actually like look at all the cards in there. A lot of it is this Willie Mays sale. I was looking at this. There's a perfectly centered PSA 5 Willie Mays that sold for a lot. But still, even without that, it was going up like 5-6% before that sale even. So the CL50 is trending up. I'm wondering if this is like a lag with the, you know, the economy doing well, but interest rates seem to be stable. So this might just be a bit of post-holiday resurgence. You know, we usually see that at the beginning of the year. We'll probably see some like resurgence with tax refund money and stuff like that. So that's not that surprising, but it is nice to get some positive news, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's gotta be the best month in terms of growth that the CL50 has had in years.
I have just gotten to the point where whatever the CL50 says is what I project onto whoever asked me the question, just because it's the easiest to wrap my arms around. I know all the cards in it. I know each card is liquid. I know it sells a lot. I don't have to like look into like outliers, and I don't have to figure out anything random like that. But half the graphs are green and half are red. And the biggest red is soccer at 4% in the last month. And I think basketball is up like 0.5% in the last month. And that one's been down for basically like 2 years straight. So we are seeing some green.
Yeah. It's good to see. And it's always good to get into the nuances of, well, which cards moved and how much and stuff. But if a person is going to if a person is going to dig in on a nuanced level, do that consistently. So maybe one card has an outlier sale in the positive direction. Are there any others that had outlier sales in the negative direction? Both things can be at play.
So, yep.
And then anytime you're looking at an index, it's not going to be perfectly representative or even close to perfectly representative of a market. It's just these 50 cards. Yep. And how they're doing.
And then there's a question about the Dallas Card Show, right?
Yes. So I think the theme of this question is the Dallas Card Show was very well attended, and I wasn't there on Saturday, but apparently it was really busy. Lots of deals happening, lots of money changing hands, so on and so forth. So even though we have these platforms like ours that have lots of indexes that are bleeding month after month, that doesn't match the eye test of the Dallas Card Show.
I didn't hear that last part.
You didn't hear the eye test part?
I never do. I just wanted to make a comment about trying to use card shows as a barometer for where the market is. As I've been looking at eBay data a lot over the last month or so, and there's so much eBay data that it would blow everyone's minds. Like just how many transactions are on eBay. These card shows are a drop in the bucket compared to what happens online. So it is a little bit of a small sample size thing. So you kind of have to just judge these shows on like energy and like how many people attend them. And you just, you know, you are just kind of going off of eye tests and vibes a little bit, just because like, oh, this sale was $100 under, people are offering 80% comps. There's just like so much data that's coming through on eBay, and like card ladder, for instance, the ladder, verified sales, the indexes, we've made it all into math and graphs. So you could just look at those numbers and you could just say out loud, here's what that market is doing. So these shows are more of just like, hey, it feels like there's a lot more people here. The trade night went to 2 a.m. and I heard a bunch of people were at that. I was at the show Sunday and there was like definitely a sense of like we're recovering from the 2 a.m. trade night, because I heard people were there pretty much all the way to the end. So there's a lot of that eye test going on as well.
Yeah. So if a person is like a member of the card show scene and like they're having a great experience, things are very liquid for them, or you know, they're the particular players that they collect or the dealers that they know are doing well, that can be true at the same time as data from online sources that something like Card Ladder tracks is totally different. Both those things can be true at the same time. And they don't, neither one necessarily has to overtake the other either. They could both continue in that contradictory position indefinitely. So that's something to think about there too. Somebody messaged me and said, do I think, or you know, what do we think will happen with the sales volume? Because December's sales volume on Card Ladder was 190 million, roughly, which was the second highest month in the last 15 months that we track. And so the question was, what's January going to be?
It's going to be higher.
Is it going to be higher or lower?
Higher.
Higher? Okay.
Yeah, because there's a... I'm just seeing a lot. Like, I'm trying to keep up with it, to be honest. Like, it's starting to push the limits of our code. There's so much eBay data coming through.
Wow. Well, and then tomorrow has... there's a Heritage auction, I think, ending tonight that has a Babe Ruth that was a $500,000 or more. And then tomorrow there's a Golden auction ending with, you know, a dozen or so six-figure cards probably.
Yeah, a lot of those months come down. Like, for instance, Golden didn't have a big auction end in November. They, like, pushed it to December. So a lot of the reason that November dipped and December jumped is that, like, you're swaying, like, $20 million in some of those big auctions from one month to the next.
Yep.
So if you are having all the big ones end before the end of January and I'm seeing an uptick in eBay, I'm predicting it'll go up. And then, like, I think it was August, we had that huge mantle sale. Yep. So, like, I'm looking at August. That was a big jump because of that huge mantle sale. So, like, these big high-end cards usually sway them in these directions. But I think eBay is going to be a big uptick.
Nice. All right. So there, we've talked about a number of different inputs here. We've gotten the sense that Dallas Card Show is vibrant. We have the sense that sales volume is going to be strong for probably a second straight month here, much stronger than where it was for the previous 6 months beforehand, with maybe an exception or two. And then we have some of the indexes, like the Card Ladder 50 index, up 15-ish percent.
There's one other, in the last. There's one other, which is... I'll answer first, and then I want to be curious your take. But like the competition level of the stuff that you're going after, are you sensing more competition? Are you sensing you're having to pay? You're not able to hold firm as much on like, hey, I'm paying a lot less because of this. I think for me, I'm sensing a few more people that I spoke to, you know, when things were going hot, are asking me questions about specific things like. They're coming back a little bit, quote unquote, or starting to look at that stuff again. So I'm getting a little bit more of that, but not a lot.
Yeah, no, I've seen a resurgence, even in some of our questions too about,
right.
You know, you'll see with the. It's not like it was 2 years ago.
Get one,
but
grab one.
All right. Let me grab the question here from my man George Bruin Killer, who comes with the question, what are the actual top 10 cards in the hobby that we should be chasing? Okay. So you start getting questions like that. It seems like, you know, somebody wants to maybe buy a card.
So there was a theme of questions which were like coming from collectors and like, how do I negotiate with someone who's not willing to budge on 2-year-old prices? That was kind of the theme for a while. Now it's going to be like, what's the most underrated Jordan card? I think I saw that one. Most underrated Jordan card.
Not just the three most underrated Jordan cards.
The other thing is Gary Vee made his little return post of him fanning out cards again. So like, he loves to pop his head in when he thinks that it's going to start going up again.
Yeah, you know, I just don't like that.
What do you like about it?
I don't like the fair weather fan.
Yeah.
Even though I was a Chicago Cubs fair weather fan when they won the World Series. But yeah, I'm just taking notes. I'm noticing the names that were active when the skies were were gray, and I'm noticing now the names who return when the skies look blue again.
And those guys usually pretend like they never left. Like, hey guys, who missed me? Let's go buying cards again. And they're, you know, making their buy posts. And it's like, no, I get it. You know, it's like people would just rather buy when the sentiment is good, and they'd rather just hide when it's bad, a lot of them. But there's definitely a sense of there's going to be more attention, so let me jump in and try to grab attention for myself, and less of like, hey, I'm looking to build up my collection, you know?
Sure. Yep. All right. Let's go on to this one here. So this was a topic that came out today. Didn't really ever make it into any of my... didn't make it into any of my like group chats or anything. You and I didn't talk about it, but there was an article from the New York Times that came out today that was about Michael Rubin, Fanatics, and the collectibles industry.
I ain't paying for that shit.
Yeah, I know, right? I was able to see it for free because it got linked to me by somebody on Facebook. I think that like breaks the paywall. But I'm not
must be nice
Facebook right now. Okay, but the article says, will Fanatics upend the world of sports collectibles? And then the subtitle is, powered by its connections with leagues and star athletes, the merchandising giant has entered the hobby universe with deep pockets and sharp elbows, and not everyone is happy.
can I butt in real quick?
Yeah.
The sports card hobby already done been upended, my friend. And that was with the leadership of Panini. I have to point that out. Look at this graph. Here was the hobby. We done been upended. Look at this. Even with the subsequent crash and fall, we're still like multiples ahead of where we were in 2019. So 2018. So it's just like, yeah, it's just like another attention grabbing headline, but you know, I guess the title would be like, is Fanatics going to take it like up again, you know, to the next tier?
That's a good, we've got a good, we done been upended. that's a great point. Yeah. I mean, it's important that somebody keeps tabs on history and what actually happened. That's another thing that, I like to store up here. Is I know what happened. I can find the facts of what happened, and then I want to know who's telling me, who's gaslighting me into thinking that something different happened. Like to keep receipts on that too.
Who's deleting messages?
Was there anything else in that article that stood out?
What are you talking about?
You said gaslighting.
Oh. Okay. What's that, Josh?
Was there anything else in that article that stood out?
A very long article. It's good. Touches on all the bases. You know, it touches on Fanatics' optimism and plans and promises of innovation. It talks about breaking, the culture of breaking. It talks about the card show experience. And the authors were very amused by how antiquated the card show experience was to them. They said the Chicago Sports Spectacular, a dated convention center near O'Hare Airport, is one of the country's biggest and oldest card shows, like a rummage sale from the days before eBay, but with way more money involved.
What does he want it to be? Like some crypto fucking convention center with robots walking around?
That's a good question.
It's like, what is it supposed to be? It's just cards. The whole, like, if you think that's antiquated, then let me point out that the whole hobby is that way. Like, it's, you know, it's cardboard and slabs with people buying and selling them. You know, it's not like this isn't some like NFT thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. And there was, I guess the thing that stood out to me maybe the most was that there was a reference to a figure about the size of the industry. So here's the paragraph. 2 years ago, Fanatics became the exclusive trading partner of MLB and the Players Union. It then bought Topps for $500 million, becoming a kingpin in an industry, and this is the important part, with an an industry worth an estimated $44 billion, according to Verified Market Research, a data firm.
And like annual?
Presumably, but there's no extra context given except that the industry is worth an estimated $44 billion. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what that meant. This article really wasn't written from a finance or a business point of view. This article's more from like a cultural point of view.
It seems a little high, but you know, I can't really argue again. I can't really like point out the real number, you know?
Yeah, I can't speak to the veracity of that source either. So
the part that makes me hesitant on that is like we track a lot of sales, including all the really high dollar ones. And if you don't, you know, and we get to like, what, a little like 3 billion at the top per year.
Yep.
And that's including like all the mega million, multi-million dollar auctions and stuff like that. So I have a hard time like 10xing that with online Facebook deals and breaking. And I guess it'd be like breakers and retail and stuff like that, like wax, but I have a hard time getting that high.
Yeah, no. And if the annual revenue of the industry is anywhere near $44 billion, how are you going to 10x that?
10x. Well, they, you know, are they 10xing the number of participants? That's definitely
right.
Not going to 10x the. That's not going to 10x the revenue by just 10x, because we already have some like rich. Some rich blood moving around, lots of money moving around already.
Well, here's a quote from Michael Rubin. Quote, the thing I'm most excited about is that this idea is 3 years old. We took our first sale in 2022, referring to Fanatics Collectibles, which now generates north of $1 billion in revenue. And we've done so in less than 2 years. But I think we're like 10% of this journey, 20% of this journey. There's so much innovation coming. So we're in the second.
They've been saying that innovation, every company has like innovation's coming to the hobby so many times. I don't even know what it means anymore.
Yeah. And this article is a good reminder just how many different threads are coexisting right now that have yet to be tied off.
Yeah.
So we have the lawsuits with Panini, which got a nice chunk of this article. We have the breaking. We have projections about the growth of the industry and the plans for the industry. We have the acquisitions of the manufacturers and the brand, or the brands and the like tops. And then we have the concerns about the hobby shop. We have the blueprint of how Fanatics took over apparel and if it will be applied here and what that means for hobby shops. And there's so many coexisting parallel threads right now that it can be easy to kind of lose track of them.
Yeah.
They're all going, there's a lot of stuff yet to resolve itself right now. Okay. So then we had some particular questions coming in from JC2Collects about presumably some of the subjects of this article. So the question is, what are your thoughts on Fanatics controlling the product, controlling the breaking marketplace, and controlling the breakers? More to the point, please discuss the concern that breakers and influencers can be controlled by limiting their distribution or dropping them entirely if they don't say nice things.
Yeah, haven't we seen a few breakers go onto different platforms and like run their own platforms, which is potentially risking future loss of supply? So maybe they're not concerned about it, and maybe they think, you know, Fanatics will remain democratic in that sense. I'm not sure. I don't know enough about this breaking world to really speak on this too much.
Yeah, I don't know a ton about it either. This question makes reference to breakers and influencers.
Yeah.
But I suppose you could expand it to content creators and the concern that content coverage is going to be biased or slanted in favor of the all-powerful entity that is manufacturing, is controlling the sales platform for where you can go get your breaks, And yeah, there's plenty of legitimate concern there. this goes back to the fundamentals of why having one is, who is Kanye, no one man should have all that power. If I may quote Kanye, this is that. It's that's the concern, is that there won't be a balance here. There won't be a balance of power. But instead, there will just be, you know, this fake regime where only the good news leaks, and every piece of content or idea or word spoken is directly or indirectly pointing the customer in the direction of buying more.
Yeah. Well, I guess you better listen to Crossover then.
Yeah. People are screwed if this is all they got.
Are we talking about the 10 kind of thing where influencers are posting those 10?
I think that's got people a little bit agitated. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is a cool idea. It's just that it had to come to me through influencers I don't care to hear it from, but you know, I guess that's how they wanted to get the word out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what is the, could you just give the idea? Did we talk about this last week? I don't think so.
No, I think it came through this after our last show, so I don't think we have. So the idea was that they are putting like a bounty of sorts out on the, not like a bounty, but it's like a, you know, if you were to pull one of the 10 cards they listed, and they're like, you know, not necessarily all Topps cards. I think I even saw like the, or are they all, they're all Topps cards, aren't they? Because like the Topps Chrome, Steph Super, they're not all Topps. There's some of them are, yeah, the Luka Prism Black was on there.
Yeah, so if you pull one of those card on there as well.
If you pull one of those, I think you get $10,000 credit to Fanatics yeah. Live.
Yep.
I mean, it's a cool idea.
Yeah. Well, all right. Let me go to JC2Collect's other final question because it relates to the 10, which is, is the way to 10X the hobby to further incentivize gambling by putting a bounty on cards that are pulled and breaks? So he's bringing in the gambling part of this.
So some of the chat, Ginger Ale says the card has to be pulled on their app, Fanatics Live.
Right.
Okay. So that's just trying to get people to want to open those big products on Fanatics Live more. And if you pull it, that makes sense. I mean, that makes sense. What was your question? Sorry.
Is there a concern about this incentivizing gambling further by just kind of dangling these additional financial rewards in front of people to encourage them to buy spots and breaks?
Yeah, I mean, wax and opening boxes is already kind of gambling, and that's like their main source of revenue, so they're just going to keep pushing the envelope. Like, that's not going to change. You know, they don't have as much control over the secondary market where it's more investing and speculating, potentially collecting, hopefully, but you know, they're going to push things that they control the revenue of, which is a lot of it's gambling.
Yep. All right. It's a very uncertain period right now, I think, for how all this stuff resolves itself. But it's all chugging along.
Yeah.
And one thing to Fanatics' credit is that when they said we're going to have this online marketplace for breaking, for example, it came out.
Yeah.
You know, didn't take 3 years or whatever. It came out. Now the question of how well is it competing versus the others. You know, I don't know. I don't buy into breaks. I couldn't tell you that. And then the question of, you know, taking over the licenses and stuff, which is like if you go back in time, it's a fantastical idea that someone would just come in, convince all the leagues and the players' associations to switch over their licenses immediately, not effective immediately, but to sign new agreements sort of in the dark of night instantly. And then drop that bombshell and then have this like 3 or 4 year runway to sort of execute the takeover and start installing, you know, marketplaces and making acquisitions and implementing things, innovations, you know, giving a new round of media promotion. Like there was a commercial for Topps during one of the playoff games last week. The Tom Brady, the LeBron pieces of this. To use the Bill Simmons word, the Tom Brady piece, the LeBron James piece. There's a lot of balls in the air.
Yeah. And it's all like actions they've taken, you know? So like we can't be too mad. I usually, you know, when it's like we're gonna 10x the hobby, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, all these like future nebulous things, I usually just completely tune that out. I don't care. But they are coming out with like, we did this, we signed LeBron, we are showing this percentage reduction in redemptions, you know, like they're showing actual figures of how that's coming down. They're talking about, you know, they signed Wembanyama, they're making some cards for the taco fracture thing. Like they're doing things, you know, they've got the dual LeBron, they're like the Brady thing, they're doing things, right? It's not just talk, and we're not just waiting for the licenses to kick over. They're kind of giving us a little bit of a preview of actionable things that will be debut patch. Like there's things happening.
What's your gut feeling on the near-term future prospects of the hobby? So like this article points out that the basketball license conveys in 2025. So presumably that means we have 2023-24 Panini products, 2024-25 NBA Panini products, and then we're done with Panini. And the NFL license, per the article, conveys in 2026. So presumably we're going to have this year's Prism, then 2024 Prism, 2025 Prism, and Panini products for football, and then that conveys. And so, like, what's your gut feeling about the next 2 to 3 years in terms of how you're going to enjoy this space as a collector, as a stakeholder, as an operator? And then, you know, and then when Fanatics takes over, what's your gut feeling about that, given what we've seen since over the last 2 years or so?
It's probably going to be choppy and awkward, is my gut feeling. Just like the awkwardness being like, we won't have Wembanyama RPAs. There's like a legal battle between the two. There's the chance that Panini, you know, takes the Tops route of 2009 and just sort of like, I don't want to say mails it in, because there's a lot of people we know that work there. They're professional people, and I think they'll do their best. But like a bit of human nature of like, this is our last year, you know, so there's a bit of that. So I would say choppy. And then the first year of Fanatics, again, like Panini, if you look at Panini's like 2009 to 2011 products, it was pretty iffy. And then like 2012 is where they started to pick it up and hit their stride. So like, I don't know, man, it's not going to be super smooth. You know, it's not going to be perfect out of the gate. It's going to be a few years of awkwardness, I think.
Yeah, it's a great word for it. Choppy, awkward. My confidence level is medium right now in terms of how much I'll enjoy the next, let's say, 5 years. It's been lower, and it's also been way higher. And I think I just see things that need to get worked out philosophically that just haven't been worked out yet. Things that are like fundamental to collecting. Questions like, what's a rookie card? Taking it back to the real basics of things. And deciding when enough is enough when it comes to the manufacturing of gimmick cards. That's something that worries me a little bit. Not a lot, doesn't worry me a ton, but it worries me a little bit that there are a decent number of collectors who just are going to consume whatever is put in front of them. And I would advocate that that we think really carefully about that.
There's also a level of like, it's a very simple thing that needs to get done when Fanatics takes over. If you really boil it down, like, what do collectors actually care about? And I can probably boil it down to like, you know, we want to know the top 101s. We want to know the gold prism / refractor. We want to know like, what are the main rookie cards, to your point? What is a rookie? What are the main rookies? What sort of autographs can we expect from the first year? What players are signing? It's almost just like, make the checklist, print the cards, distribute them fairly in retail and wax, get them into collectors' hands. Like, this is a thing that's been going on for decades at this point, and it's been fairly consistent, and we've had these sort of rules that have come out of it based on what are the top cards, what are the top brands, et cetera, et cetera. So like when we switch, there's going to be new ones that pop up, that jump up, and we have to like immediately figure out those hierarchies. So if they execute on that part of it, it will be less choppy and awkward. And I think maybe I was reminded of this because you're like, it's up in the air. We don't know if that's going to work. This is something that needs to get figured out. We need to figure out what this is. And if it does get figured out, great. And we'll move forward and we'll have, you know, Tops and Fanatics building up their many year run, hopefully, of like establishing this new history of like what the top cards are going
to
be.
Definitely. All right. Let's move on to something else that was a bit of a lightning rod this week, topic wise. I have two on this from totally different points of view. Titty Subs says, please discuss the Caitlin Clark superfractor.
Mm-hmm.
Why, just why? And on the other side, Kevin M. Cormier says, if you're going to mention the Caitlin Clark sale, only to talk shit about it, may I ask that you consider not doing that? Very polite. Polite, you can't be mad when somebody is polite in their request. Let me just pull it up really quick here. This sale occurred on Thursday night in the PWCC premiere, and it is one of the highest college uniform sales of all time. I believe the highest is a Steph Curry and his Davidson uniform exquisite.
That was going to be my question.
Yeah.
Is like, this isn't even like a male-female thing, Chris. It's like, are we sure we want to put this much value into a college card that's a sticker out of?
This goes to my point and in your point that we were just talking about. So this is the 2022 Bowman University Super Refractor autograph, one of Caitlin Clark, and sold for $78,000.
Yeah.
With PWCC Premier. Yeah, so go ahead. Josh, was sort of the thoughts that were flowing.
I mean, I already said it. Like, I'm not even talking about the male-female thing. People maybe want to make it about that, but I would never understood, you know, those types of super high dollars for college cards of male athletes or female athletes, and then watching them decline quickly once the license card's coming out. But I don't know enough about the WNBA market to know, like, maybe people would prefer college for female athletes over WNBA. And Caitlin Clark, obviously, you know, her brand is going to be tied to that, like, March Madness run, which happened in her college uniform. But we've had that for males a lot, where they have like a big college run and then like the NBA cards start coming out and then nobody cares anymore about the college stuff. So, you know, this feels like a short-sighted thing, but I don't know. I guess it's cool.
Yeah. And there are people who are advocating strongly that this sale is representative of how transformative Caitlin Clark has been for women's basketball.
Yeah.
And that she is a real sensation right now. And like, she was like the LeBron commercial that Topps produced. She was featured in that commercial. It was her. It was Wembanyama, a few others. And there are commenters in the chat. I've seen commenters elsewhere on the internet who have made the point that this particular situation with women's basketball, the collegiate uniform cards may represent the pinnacle of collecting women's basketball. I don't know if that's true or not. I can't speak to that, but that's what I've been told. And she's definitely, you know, a captivating figure. Like when we were at the Mint Collective last year, we went to lunch and put on her game on our cell phones while they were in the March Madness tournament. I've never done that for a women's basketball game before. It was the allure of watching Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. So there's something to be said there. And it's great to see a new rising hobby superstar. You don't get to come out of nowhere and have a card sell for $78,000 without coming on a lot of radars. And now this is a new name in the hobby that has to be taken seriously. But the thing that I get concerned about again, though, is that where does this card actually land in her hierarchy of cards? Is this the best card she's ever going to have?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what her checklist looks like. But the people who collect her should. They should. And they should be able to explain to me, not that they haven't, but they should be able to explain to me, yeah, this is her best card and this is why. Because the worry is that this is a hyped product and it's pre-RC. If this were in the NBA context, this would be a pre-RC, a pre-rookie card. And there would be a real concern that there's excitement around a card like this, and Fanatics obviously going to be excited about a card like this, and it's pushing for the Bowman University product, which is very important to their product offering right now until they get the NBA and the NFL licenses. But is this a real mountaintop card? I don't know, but those are the questions that I ask.
Yeah. Then I remember that people pay that much for Desmond Ridder cards, and I'm like, you know, whatever. People want to pay.
Right.
You like Caitlin Clark. If they want all the supers, you know, you gotta get it, you gotta pay. So I don't know. If it's like us trying to hype up a college product and getting, that's where I'm like, you know, that's where we come in with like, hey, pump the brakes, don't get too excited and go out and buy these and, you know, think that you're going to get rich off of it, because that's usually what we see with college products. But if we're talking about a super fractor and a super collector of Caitlin Clark, and this is what they value it at, you know, who are we to, you know, say this is, I wouldn't pay that much. That doesn't mean that someone else wouldn't.
Totally. It was one of the highest sales from PWCC Premier.
Yeah.
So, all right.
We noticed it. So.
All right. Moving on. Next question is from Kevin M. Cormier again. He says, can I put forth a motion that bans story sale posts from being a group shot of cards taken from a drone? Taken far away. So I think he's envisioning like the story sale post where it's like this. It's just nothing but just squares of cards seen from afar. And I always wondered about too, like, do people actually look at this? Like, do people stop and just like actually look and like, what are your 8 cards in your story post from that? I mean, I don't know.
People keep doing this thing.
Mellow ball prisms.
I thought you were about to flex on me, but you just grabbed some random slabs.
These are cards that Christina and I pulled and then graded.
People keep doing this thing on Facebook where they will post like 10 cards just like you did right there. I'll put prices for like 7 of them. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with those other 3? Are you just putting them in there just because, or you're not pricing it? Like, what's going on? Price all 10 in order here, or do 10 separate posts or something.
Yes. If I see a sequence of story posts that's like 10 story posts with 8 to 12 cards a piece, I'll look at the first story post. And I'll get a sense of what's in here. And if there's a chance that there might be something of a player that I collect or a set that I like, maybe I'll stop and I'll squint at the next few slides, maybe. But if not, then I'm not looking at the rest of the slides, because that's time. That's like, it's easier for me if I can just sort of tap through 8 pictures than if I'm just like having to squint, having to click, hold, try to, and you can't zoom in on your phone on a story.
Yep.
But hey, you know, that's just me. I know that people do story sales like that and they sell all their cards. So more power to you. But from Kevin, I hear you, man. I don't love having to deal with those either. All right. From Jeff Rose, Jordans, and more. I've pivoted my strategy and have started following your guys' advice on getting the best cards first, and I'm going with the rock, then pebbles, then sand approach to my collecting now. And at the same time, today, when I was packing up 20 Michael Jordan cards to ship off to pay for one card, which is a grail, I was feeling some type of way. Do you guys get a sense of seller's remorse sometimes?
Yeah, but it usually wears off once you have the new card.
True. I took issue with a little bit of this comment. Great, great question. But I think we go to great lengths not to give advice on this show. So I wouldn't characterize it as taking advice. I would characterize it as like maybe you agree with our opinion. That might be splitting hairs, but like I would never tell somebody, or at least I wouldn't intend to tell somebody. I may have misspoken at some point. I would never say you should collect this way. You should consolidate your 20 cards into one, because that doesn't work for everybody. There are some people who would rather have 20 cards than one. There are some, and that's why like I got a little bit anxious when I read this question, because it's like he's saying like, hey, I felt a little bad shipping out my 20 MJs, or I felt some type of way. And it's like, okay, we'll try this and see if that grail is going to do for you as a collector what the 20 cards did. Because I know that there are people who prefer to have the 20 cards than the one.
Yep. Agreed.
But for how it works for me or for how it works for Josh, like Josh said, as soon as you get the card, it starts to feel a lot better. And that's how I feel as well.
But
We
like selling cards too. Like it's a fun thing to get money from your PayPal and pack it up and take it to the post office. That's like a fun thing for me as well. And I usually feel good, you know, having some cards sent out and I have more space on my desk, et cetera. And then I have the new one coming in to replace it. So like that whole process is like enjoyable for me. So if you're not enjoying it at the selling and packing up part, then maybe it's not for you.
Yeah, totally. That's a good point. You know, I recently transformed one of my PCs into a much smaller PC, a consolidation of sorts. And it, not only do I like the smaller PC of better cards better, more, I like that more, but also I don't have the same eBay anxiety. When I had more smaller cards of a player, then every time a similar smaller card, with a new one that I didn't own, would show up on eBay, I'd feel this pressure that I have to go get it to keep the theme going of what this collection is. And like, it would bother me if it slipped through the cracks, especially if it's a cheap player, which this player was. You know, we're talking about cards that are 50, 60 bucks in certain instances or less. And then it would just kind of slip through the cracks unless I go buy it. But then I ended up buying it and I just started accumulating it all. And it's just like, I'm glad that I don't have that theme that I have to hold myself true to. There's something extra nice about that too. Do you know what I mean?
There was I feel like one of my biggest strengths that I gained from this last year was not like having to buy a card, because I would think someone else is going to say, hey, you're missing this in that run. Like I see that you have all these, why don't you have this card? Or people would say, you have X, Y, and Z. How come you don't have, you know, R? Why don't you have this card? And I feel like I did a better job of being like, I don't like the look of that card. I understand how it fits into what you're saying, but I don't want to spend the money it would require to obtain a card I don't enjoy looking at. Like it doesn't, and 5 years from now, the person who would have said that to me would not still be around, or, you know, I wouldn't be chatting with them anymore. And it always comes back to like what I want to enjoy having in my PC. And that just, it always, you know, it always ends up being a smarter decision when I think about it that way.
Totally. Great question. How do you like that turn of phrase? Rocks, then pebbles, then sand.
Interesting. I don't remember ever saying that one, but I like it.
I like it, too. All right. From Lameem James, another guy who is coming around again now that the hobby's hot. No, I'm just joking.
Someone's going to make an appearance, and I'm waiting for you to drop a name of who gets assigned to be inside my, you know, right here next to me. So maybe it's Lameem, or we can keep thinking.
No, not Lameem.
Okay.
Lameem says, I need the investment thesis on Kaboom CJ Stroud cards.
Someone was telling me about Kabooms. Was it you guys? Where it's like, there's like 10 of them now or something? 10 of each? There's like 10 variations of them or something?
Some players have two. Some players have a vertical and a horizontal. I don't know if they're all vertical. I know this because McCaffrey in this year's Kaboom has two. He has a vertical and he has a horizontal. And it surprised me when I saw one of the green one of ones appear and then the other one appeared too. I was like, wow, this guy has two different Kabooms for one player this year, which I don't love. I don't. Starts to get excessive. This goes back to the earlier question about things that make me concerned about the state of the cards right now.
Yeah.
So let me show this Stroud Kaboom while we talk. It looks like he has two as well. So I'll show these. And go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I just feel like the Kaboom hype is just reaching its peak here.
Which is a fascinating thing to think about because it's been quite hyped. So this one, note, not a verified sale in Card Ladder. Doesn't mean it's a good sale, doesn't mean it's a bad sale, just means nobody's looked at it. But it did complete on eBay. Sold for 15 grand.
Dang, you didn't verify that one, you sure?
I'm sure.
Oh, not man.
Actively tracking this card.
Shit,
that part of our database right now.
It's safe to say that. That's not looking good.
I can't call it just from what we. I want to look a little closer. I wonder if it's in terrible.
Doesn't he have a gold and a green? That's just like the silver, right? 15 yeah. grand. What's going on?
I don't know. The highest sale I can see in Terapeak of a Stroud Kaboom is 11,000. Let's say it's even 8,000. I don't know. I haven't looked at the checklist for 2023 Absolute. Let's see what all the parallels they might have are. I mean, but let's just like take the question at face value as well, which is people are paying a ton of money for CJ Stroud cards. Why? I think that's the question.
They're the best rookie season ever.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that. I can have a little rant on this.
Oh, great. Here comes some EPA.
I can't find a full checklist for this product on Cardboard Connection right now.
For Kaboom?
Yeah. It's in 2023 episode.
Is it bad that after all these years, I still don't know what product Kaboom comes out of?
No, they change it.
They change it sometimes.
That's not good.
No.
For us. I only see four.
Cares? Who cares? Like, it's a fucking Kaboom card. You know they're already overvalued.
It's not even numbered. It's not even numbered, dude.
Yes, we've got Kaboom horizontal and Kaboom vertical, and then each one has a gold and a green parallel, which ain't too bad.
Sure.
You just have the base, and then you have a gold out of 10 and a green out of 1. Could be worse.
Super rare.
Super rare. Yeah, I think that CJ Stroud got a ton of hype. And how old is CJ Stroud? He was a top 2 pick. He is 22 years old. I mean, what he's doing at his age is phenomenal.
He's one of the younger ones, for sure.
Yeah. But he's also being put into conversations prematurely. I've definitely noticed this throughout top-down media, including social media. That, you know, there's narrative setting that's taking place about he's a top 5 quarterback in the league and he should be in the MVP conversation because of the way that the Houston Texans turned things around. And these were narratives. These are real narratives that persisted through the mid to later part of the season. And then you magnify that hype by the Kaboom hype. And now you've got a recipe for people going nuts. And there's also, like, I also get the sense, Josh, as an aside here, and you tell me if you get this sense too, that, like, when there's a resurgence in the Kaboom hype and there's, like, this, there's like a professionalizing or a formalizing of Breaker content and the Breaker experience that hasn't existed before. Like, Breakers have really begun to become effective in ways that, in the ways that exceed how they've ever been effective before, in terms of building an excitement around a product to get people to buy into breaks to hit those cards. And I think that's, I think there's new people coming in who are going, who are being baptized in the hype for the first time. They're being baptized in the Kaboom hype. They're being baptized in the new player prospecting hype. And this is a culmination of sort of a new energy, of new money, of new people. And then they're being so effectively targeted by breakers and by selling platforms in ways that they haven't been before. Do you get that sense too?
Yeah, 100%. This is like one of the things I was talking about earlier with just like being cautious with what Fanatics is going to market to you, because they're going to market what they're selling, which is new product, which is breaking, which is gambling, which is young QB prospects, because that's what's in their new products. You know, they're not going to want to hype to you 2003 LeBron exquisite cards, because they have no control over any sort of revenue related to that at all. You know, that's a secondary market at this point. So like that sort of like collecting older cards thing is just, it's just always going to take a backseat because there's just not any revenue streams towards that. So these companies that you're saying the marketization of it is always going to be geared towards the young stuff. I think maybe that's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. And which is hard, because as a collector, even you, like, you collect young guys, but still, like, they're not going to want to market like 2017 Mahomes rookie cards as much, because they just don't have any sort of control over it. So you, as someone who's looking into that, into those cards, it's going to be hard for you to like to dive into that when you're distracted by like, you got to get Stroud, you got to do this, you got to get, you know, the next rookie crop, you got to look, start looking at Caleb Williams and understanding his stuff, because that's where, you know, the Lord of the Rings light is going to be pointing at.
Sorry, I need to jot that down as a title.
Like the eye of Sauron. He's like, you know, he's like pointing the eye. He's looking for it. That's what they're pointing at, the breakers and the new stuff.
Totally. Yeah. This is so important to understand. I feel like you might be able to listen to people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that made me laugh too. Okay.
I'm not active, guys.
Okay. So you might just listen to people talking about this and not really understand the magnitude of it, but like the magnitude of it can be seen in these CJ Stroud Kaboom prices.
Yeah.
That's your manifestation of all the stuff, all the factors that were just discussed there. And we also, you know, we also have the compounding problems of there's nowhere close to all the CJ Stroud rookie products on the market yet.
Yeah. I mean, think about it this way. If we actually wanted to 10x the hobby, that doesn't mean we want to 10x the amount of wax being purchased. That doesn't mean we want to 10x the amount of money spent in breaks. It means that we want to 10x, you know, everything, right? So that would include 10xing secondary purchase prices on, you know, random cards from the 90s and vintage, which these companies aren't going to want to talk about. So like, if we actually want to 10x, we have to understand the full complexity of the entire hobby, not just the, you know, brand new products coming out next year.
Totally. All right. There you go, Lameem. There's the investment thesis. All right. Let's go on to some more questions here. Strong Cards 88 says, after Fanatics takes over, which Panini products will stand the test of time besides Prism? See, these questions start to come in.
Man, this is we're back to like the clever ways of asking us which cards to invest in. Love it. I mean, this is I'll welcome it at this point. I'll get tired of it in a couple weeks, but for now, it'll be good.
I like this question too because it can be answered from the point of view of significance. Which products are going to be significant? So
yeah,
I did, you know, the thing that pushed me over the edge to add an NT Shield autograph 1/1 to our collection was understanding that the significance of the NT Logo Man autograph rookie 1/1 and of the NT Shield autograph 1/1, whether it's basketball or football, the significance of those cards to this era, those are the most significant cards. As much as I hate that, as much as I wish the most significant card was the Prism Black Finite or the Prism Black and Basketball or the Optic Gold Vinyl or the Select Black Prism or whatever, as much as I wish that was the case, it's not. If you go and look at what the five highest selling cards are from the Panini era, it's a 2 football Panini Shield autograph 1/1 rookies. It's 2 Panini Logoman autograph 1/1s from basketball rookies. And then it's the triple Logoman from LeBron from Flawless. 4 NT Shield or Logoman autograph 1/1 rookies. And then a triple Logoman from Flawless of LeBron. Those are the 5 highest selling cards from the Panini era. Those are the most significant cards of this era.
Yeah. Yeah. You built the top, and then it's like, then it comes down to the blacks and the 1/1s. There's a lot of 1/1s, but I think a few have definitely distinguished themselves. And then you get to like Prism Gold and NT out of 99s and stuff. But usually when this happens, like many years down the line, it really starts to like shrink into like what players and what products. So like at this point, people are starting to think, what are like the top 5? What are the top 5 players from the era, top 5 cards? So I think it's smart to think that way because eventually it will shrink down.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's so true. And I love how you pointed out that like the player becomes a very key part of that. Like sets and products and years of products really boil down to like who's the GOAT, you know. And then there's a concern that the Panini era might not have a GOAT who's of the era, who was a rookie card during Panini's run.
Stop it, it's Luka.
There is a concern about that.
And it's Mahomes.
Those are some names. You know, those are definitely some names, but
Giannis.
Yep. Curry is totally encapsulated in the Panini era. He's much better than Giannis.
He's got top scrum.
Yeah, he's in top scrum too, but he has NT. Yep. His Panini offer is weak. No doubt about that. But yeah, that's a concern that's been pointed out to me numerous times. Is like, who's going to be the player? Who's going to be the Michael Jordan of what Michael Jordan was to the 90s, what LeBron is to the 2000s, who's going to be that for the 2010s?
Yeah.
Or will there be one? Because the other side of that discussion, though, is that, you know, you don't have it's the hobby's chicken or the egg question. Which comes first?
Oh, scientists discovered what comes first.
Okay.
It's the chicken because there's protein that's in the eggshell. You could go read the report.
Where did the chicken come from?
It's evolution.
Okay. All right. Well, we solved that.
Creation, whatever you believe.
We solved the hobby's chicken and the egg problem. Or we solved science's chicken and the egg problem. But the hobby's chicken and the egg is this. What comes first? Player? Is player the dictating factor? If you don't have the all-time great, highly collectible player, does it just make all the cards from that era, from that product, from that set, undesirable? Or is the thing that comes first the product and the set? And then you look for and you find the great players from that product or that set? Yes.
90s basketball cards. Jordan,
yep.
Was it LeBron? Vintage baseball, Mickey Mantle. Like, you have to have the one guy. You just do.
Okay.
Right, that's my thought.
I think that the phrase from MK, which is player first, is appropriate. And then sometimes you can, like, contort it, right? You can be like, well, you have Michael Jordan from the 90s, but since you have him elevating that set, now you can have all types of other guys in that set who matter more because Michael Jordan has made that set matter more. So you can have that, right? What do you think about that?
We might also have this era be, remember, like, prospecting and, like, the one-on-ones, you know? Like, so there might be a sense of, like, few of these, and I might just be thinking this way because these players are still active and they're still young and they're still technically prospects, but like, and we just don't know how it's going to shake out necessarily, but like, we might just remember, like, these are the five guys that we prospected on and they actually turned out to be mega superstars, you know? Like, it might be a few guys holding up that Panini mantle together because they represent prospecting and they made it. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be. It's like there's something too about, this is true in sports discussions and it's true in, I think, the card hobby. Every era has its goats. They're gonna have it. So like, when I was a kid in the 90s, I wanted Michael Jordan cards, I wanted Hakeem Olajuwon cards, I wanted Chris Webber cards, even though the prudence players to collect were Will Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I wanted
my era. And now I feel like a guy from my era is my GOAT. And it stands to reason that that's going to happen with this era. They're trying to do it in football right now. Mad Dog, the supposed defender of the old guard, Mad Dog went on ESPN this week and said, Patrick Mahomes is the greatest football player of all time. He has surpassed Tom Brady because he beat the Bills in the divisional round.
I think they call that prisoner of the moment.
Yes. And if you look statistically, Tom Brady has played the greatest season ever. His five-year peak is the highest five-year peak ever. And he has seven Super Bowls to his name. And he's got the head-to-head over Mahomes locked. So the arguments for Mahomes, they're going to really need to be bolstered by more MVPs, lots of Super Bowls, and statistical production that's going to surpass Brady. Because not only does Brady have the Super Bowls, not only does he have the best, his 2017 season is the highest QBR ever. It's 87. Mahomes this year was 63. That gulf is tremendous. In the five-year peak stuff, Brady's—he beats Manning, he beats Mahomes, he beats all of them, and then he's got all the longevity. He's got the most touchdowns, he's got the most yards, he's got all of it. So you want to surpass that, but as I say that, you know, there's a world where, you know, some see it as Tom Brady's Michael Jordan, Patrick Mahomes is LeBron James. What if Tom Brady is Bill Russell, and Patrick Mahomes is Michael Jordan? What if that's the world that we're heading towards?
Yeah.
Every generation could have its go.
He's on pace. He just has to do it for like another 15 years.
That's it.
Or whatever.
Just another 15 years.
No problem.
Yeah. I'd take a Tom Brady rookie one of one if it was in a pro uniform. All right.
Over the Mahomes black or the Shield auto.
I don't know about that. I like Mahomes a lot too. All right. Did you have any other products you wanted to throw a bone to in terms of the Panini ones that stand the test?
Status.
That's
nice. There was a question about giving you guys credit for not buying a house. Can you do that one? Because
yes.
I have a little bit of a qualm with that.
That's from Mad City.
Got a little bit of a bone to pick.
Let's go. I want all the credit for not buying a house. All right.
I want my own credit.
Go ahead. Oh, you take this.
Oh, read the question and I'll pick my bones.
Okay, here's the question. I re-listened to Chris's appearance on Stacking Slabs from April of 2022. He referred to himself and Christina as card radicals. someone else I spoke to recently said something similar, where they chose to buy cards instead of owning a house. They now live under the underpass with a series of slabs and others. Just curious, what are the defining characteristics of a card radical? Is Josh not a card radical because he owns a house?
All right.
Oh, boy.
Let me pick the bone, and then we can get back to the question.
Okay, pick the bone.
I bought this house in 2013, way before I started collecting. And after I hit the boom point of like having some of these really big cards, I could have sold some stuff and like bought a giant house. You know, not giant. I could have upgraded my house. I could have sold this one. I could have moved up in the world. I could have got my fancy new car. Could have done all that. I stayed in this house and kept buying more cards and doubled down. So that's my bone. Give me some credit for that.
Give the man his credit.
I'm just going to say it. If you did mortgage your house, get a second mortgage on your house to buy more sports cards, you're not a radical.
I guess I could have done that.
Yeah. That's the first thing I thought about, too, is I was like, Josh bought his house, like, 10 years ago, 11 years ago.
You guys have bathrooms over in that place you're staying at?
Yes.
That's pretty posh for you, Chris.
I know,
can't you?
I know. We need to go back to the bucket.
You guys
need to get downgraded. Than people.
Okay. On the thing of card radicals, I'm not sure exactly what I meant. You know, whenever I get fired up about an idea, I'll be very passionate about it. I'll think about it. I'll come up with stuff. And then, honestly, half the time I forgot what I even said. So I'm really not sure what I meant by that. But I've been thinking about this from a different point of view, which is that as a collector, my favorite times from a certain point of view were when I was doing foolishly radical things, like spending every last dime to go get a Michael Jordan card while I was a college student. And that was, you know, not financially wise and not prudent and not recommended at all. But it's also exhilarating. It's living on a belief. I'm sure it was very similar to you, but on a bigger scale than the scale I was on at the time, when you got the LeBron RPA for the first time. I'm guessing that the level of belief you had to have in yourself and cards and the hobby and sports and just enjoying life. You know, there's something meaningful. There's something extra about that. That isn't wise. It isn't, you know, I'm not advising people to do that at all. I'm advising the opposite. But I relate it to in the arts, in music, for example, there's a well-known generalization, trope, stereotype that the starving artist produces the best work. Mm. And then when that person becomes rich or, you know, they become a tour and the quality of the music deteriorates.
Yep.
And I have observed this. I definitely have observed this with certain artists. And there's something about the starving collector that resonates with that in the same way. The starving collector is just, there's something about it.
Yeah. I mean, even the athlete, before they get their giant contract, a lot, not everybody, you know, the big guy, big time superstars, they perform no matter the contract, but there's a lot of guys that once they get the big contract, you know, it tends to deteriorate. I'm thinking of you, DeAndre Ayton, fucking bum.
And then I look at cards and I look at billionaires who have come into the hobby recently,
mm-hmm.
something we know about. And I just wonder, did the card cost enough to hurt? Did the card cost you enough to hurt? Or did you just, I'll deploy $1 million? Yeah. That's great. Happy to have you in the hobby.
Like, hey, that's what I say. I deploy a some assets here. Yeah. Deploy some capital towards these assets.
Happy to have you in the hobby. Welcome aboard. But if the card purchase doesn't hurt, if it doesn't make you sweat, if it doesn't hurt, did you really buy a card?
Yeah. I've had some ones that definitely hurt where I'm sitting on the stairs like, what did I just do? Like, why did you just do that? We could have gotten us a summer home instead. Nope, fuck the summer home.
All right.
We have air conditioning.
And so I think about that, and I think, but very lucky timing in a lot of ways for collectors like myself and Christina, because had I been a college student, but just 3 or 4 years later, and I came back to the hobby during the beginning of the pandemic, I guess 4 or 5 years later, you know, and then I'm purchasing things and I'm passionate about it, but the market is at a high and I get crushed. You know, that's part of the game too, is just because you have conviction, you have belief, it can fall down to something as simple as timing and luck. And it always does, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
So it's not advisable. It's not being a card radical. But it's something to think about. It's something to sort of marvel at, is people who have that much. The starving collector is just an interesting concept. All right. Let's go on here.
I'm rich. The other way of saying it. I'm card rich.
That's the opposite. Yeah. Or that, yeah, yeah. Right. Exactly. Card rich. Good.
All your net worth is tied up in cards.
Which was a thing that people were mocked for during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. You need to diversify and have 10% of your liquid assets. Whoa, whoa. You need to be buying real estate instead.
Okay. All right. Let's see. What else do we have? What else do we have? Let's go to Vinny Slavarino. Always enjoy the show. I confirmed with Memory Lane that Top All Bids is not an infinity bid.
Of course he did.
How disappointing.
I know.
Couldn't you just, can you just bid a really high number? Why do you need to have the distinction of it being a top bid or whatever? You can already do that without calling it a top bid. You just go into the thing and hit the drop down and scroll down and put in your max, and it won't bid that right away. It'll bid up for you.
Vinny goes on to explain. It's basically a mega bid where you put in your max and automatically outbid up to the said max. Once submitted, you can't cancel or lower your max, but you can increase it. So it is basically a standing mega bid. Though yep. I like the idea of the infinity bid better, my wife did not. Best Vinny. So Vinny just doing some background research and follow-up. Appreciate you, Vinny.
I think we wasted 30 minutes going over that concept and like the double infinity bid and what do those two people do, and ugh.
Don't worry. Someone out there was listening and is installing the infinity bid as we speak.
Maybe Ken will do that for us so we can see it in action.
Maybe. Okay. Chaz Pennysleeve's question is this. Although you guys don't actively buy into breaks
yet,
what are your thoughts on break comp cards approach? Excuse me, to providing break pricing data to the hobby. Also, has anyone prior attempted to provide comparative breaking price data on newer cards? Are you familiar with this site?
Is this
with this paper?
Well, I just want to clarify. Is this saying like the cost to buy into the team of a break, like the average comp of that, or is this like the cards that come out of it after?
No, this is like the aggregate. I'm pretty sure the way this works is they aggregate the price of each of the teams. Okay, so right here.
And they add them up. This is what the box is worth.
Yeah, so here's an example from their social media, breakcomp.com, update 2023 Top Stadium Club, 16 hobby box case, pick your team break, showing asking price, aggregate pick your team pricing.
I see. There we go. So it's like which breaker is the best value?
Yes.
Got it. I like this.
Yeah. You know who does that?
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet you Backyard Breaks and some others would not want this list to come out because it would show that they're too expensive.
Right. I think there is, look, I've never used it. I've never verified it. I've never checked it out. It seems to be run by a guy who's passionate. This is my first time ever going to the site. But the thing I'd be concerned about is, like, sometimes the prices on that stuff is fluid. And, you know, I would just be like, I would just want to be 100% sure that the price is accurate. And I'm sure the creator is. That's just, I'm a worrier. That's one of the first things that I start worrying about. But yeah, I mean, this is a tool that, if properly executed, should provide a competitive incentive to drive down the cost of breaks to the smallest margin of profit possible.
But I can already hear it now. I can just envision the story post and the live explanation after that data comes out for someone ranked low. They would say these words, guaranteed. Well, you're paying for the entertainment value of watching our breaks.
Yes, of course. Course.
We are shirtless and we scream and we wear funny headbands and dye our hair. We bleach our hair blonde, so that's what you're paying for.
Right. And I'm sure that has been said.
We say things like let's go and, you know, other various young person phrases they scream.
Yep. Yep. And if, you know, hey, if that's true, then people will keep paying that entertainment premium and there's nothing to worry about.
No. Nothing to worry about. Let's actually raise our prices now that this is out. We are a premium. We want to distinguish ourselves as the Apple of breaks. Our prices are higher on purpose. Deal with it.
It's like that guy who asked his landlord to raise his rent even higher so he'll grind harder.
How could I grind and how could I bring you a better product if I'm charging you less?
Right. Exactly. Everyone in the breaks like, can you charge me a little bit more, please?
Grind harder. So whoever is the landlord of that person should probably alert everyone else that that person pays. Like, hey, this guy is paying extra. You should just tell him that prices are going up, and he will buy it.
Yeah. So there you go, Chaz. I know that this site has made the rounds of some content creators, and I haven't had a chance to see any of them cover it. So I can't really speak more to this site than that, but the theory is good. And the execution, if done right, should be a good thing.
Let's just tone down the greens.
Fair. Yeah. All right. What else do we want to get to here? Okay, this was an interesting one. Oh, no, I like this one. All right, this is from Coastal Collection 29. Who says, knowing that you guys collect goats like Michael Jordan and LeBron, but you also have side pieces of guys like McCaffrey and Penny Hardaway, do you try to strike a certain ratio when it comes to the value of your PCs? I find myself wanting to up the percentage of PC players that I think have a better long-term staying power while lowering the percentage of players that may not. I heard Chris mention that he had to take his PC to Judgment Day to make sure he didn't have too many McCaffreys, correct, and figured that this was the basis for that. So I'm curious of your thoughts, and as Vinny always says, enjoy the show.
Yeah. Well, the way that we collect, this is an easy one. The way that we collect, we want the best of the player regardless of the players. So it just sort of works itself out that like 90% of our value in our PCs are just going to be with those goats because, you know, they're just way more expensive. So it just kind of works itself out.
Yep.
This also is in that bucket of question, I would say, of, you know, yeah, what are we calling this? Like, just give me a name, this little bucket, name this bucket category.
Tactical buying questions.
Or like future optimism. Yeah. Pending optimism. Pending optimism.
Bull signals. Pending optimism.
Pending optimism and bull signals. That's the new book we're coming out with.
A thesis of card investing.
And It's usually signaled by questions of future optimism in the hobby.
Someone unironically is going to listen to this episode and inevitably DM you and say, could you make an index of hobby optimism based on how many crossover questions get read that fall into the hobby optimism buckets?
This is write down pending optimism and bull signals, because that might be one of the first times we've ever had a joint caption, and I love that.
That is good. That is a hell of a title to see, pending optimism and bull signals.
It's just like, they read that and it's like, what the fuck are those two talking about?
Oh, name this bucket is pretty good, dude. Okay.
Name this bucket.
All right.
You also collect young guys, so that's yes. Unfortunate too.
Build up a big pile of those young guys.
They're all way younger than we are. You know that, right? Like, we're at the point where it's like LeBron is the only player older than us.
Yes. Yep. I remember it dawned on me when I was like 24. I was like, damn, I'm like the same age as like these rising stars. And I'm like, and I'm only 24. Like, God, that's when I knew that the world had outpaced me.
It's just like the way that they speak about the older players, like, you know, Vince Carter's last few years and Dirk. It's like, man, they're still like in their 30s and I'm in my late 30s. Like, is that how you guys talk about me in my life? I'm just like a decrepit, like I can fucking walk and stuff.
Yeah, I love when Bill's like, yeah, you know, this so-and-so, he's so old, you know. Like, dude, you're 20 years old.
He has to go on his walks and his podcasts just to like stay in shape. He's got the whole head of gray hair. Come on, Bill, calm down.
Bill, he's man. Okay.
He's got the 20-year-old headphones. You notice that?
Yep, I got those too. Card radicals. Have those.
You can't be buying $100 headphones if you're going to be collecting cards.
Right. Okay, to this, the heart of this question, it is good to think about, like, for example, I don't intend to ever have Michael Jordan represent less than half of my collection. Food for thought. All right. So I do like to think about that. Christian McCaffrey started off as this fun side project during the pandemic when everybody's prices were too high, including his. And that can't become too big of a slice of the PC. Like that, the McCaffrey collection really is, it's already too big, if we're going to be honest.
You're big on what, like, re-something your portfolio? What's the word?
Diversify? Re-diversify?
There's another word.
Rebalance.
There you go. Go. You're big on rebalancing your portfolio. Is that what you're saying?
Yep. Sometimes that portfolio needs to be balanced again.
And then rebalance. You just gotta.
Yes, exactly.
Once a month, right. You check that portfolio and I rebalance it.
For sure. All right. Bruin Killer says, we did this question originally, but I don't know if you want to take a stab at it. What are the actual top 10 cards in the hobby that we should be chasing?
Hmm. Pending optimism and bull. 10. It depends on the player, and that's where I start. And then depends on the era. You know, I'm never gonna make like a top 10. You know, Jordan Fleer Mantle 52 list. That just is not
exactly. There isn't one. There is not a top 10 list that applies to any one person. There just isn't. Each person. Is going to have their own top. My top 10 list is going to be way different than yours. It's going to be different than Stiff Arm Wax, the producer of this show. It's going to be different. We're all going to have very different top 10s, which is one of the greatest things about the hobby market.
Right. Did you ever Google like the top 10 cards of your PC guy when you were first getting in, like Michael Jordan, and you're like, looking back, if you Google those now, it's like, those lists are so bad. I've done them from LeBron, and it's like, SP Authentic base card, number 5. And it's like, what? This is like the worst list I've ever seen.
Yeah. That that is the area of hobby contents that is the most ripe for development. All right. Stiff says, wait, don't we all have the Bulbul Black 1/1 as number one?
Yeah.
We saw him. We saw Bulbul.
Yeah, he's the one who's, you could see his head above the rest of the the team's huddle.
So tall. Okay. Oh, this came from Fan Tomas Four Cards. If you could start your collection all over, would you collect the same players and the same cards?
Yes.
I think so too. And I think if I wouldn't, if like there's some realignment in my PC that would happen, knowing what I know now, just make the change now. I would just make the adjustment now.
Yeah.
You know, like.
So like CJ Stroud is all you're thinking?
So, I am pivoting, actually.
You're going to rebalance that portfolio into CJ Stroud Kaboom cards.
I am going all in on raw CJ Stroud Kaboom horizontals.
Dude, that's going to be a big play for you.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yep, I'm seeing a big runway.
Yeah. Definitely some bull signals coming your way.
Yep, a little bit of tailwinds, a little bit of headwinds overall. Ended up.
We're terrible at coming up with funny catchphrases of investing. It's bad.
It is very bad. But I wake up and grind. Nonetheless.
Well, I'm going to need you to raise my rent so I can grind even harder than you.
You call up your bank and you say, could you raise the interest rate on my mortgage, please? I want to show you how hard I'm working over here.
The guy on the support call on the other line is like, sir, I think you're an idiot. I don't think this is what you want. You should go downstairs right now. Go up to your front desk of that apartment and say, raise my rent. I demand it.
I want you to raise my rent, and I want it now.
You just pay me the difference.
Call J.G. Wentworth. All right.
Yeah, just pay me and Christina the diff. We'll be fine.
And then you guys will pay even more to your debt collector.
Who's the one that actually profits here? Just the banks? So if we grind harder, the banks actually just make more money? This is stupid.
Yep. Does seem pretty dumb. Okay. Let's see. Oh, can I enter another question into the pending optimism and bull signals bucket?
If I don't have to answer it.
Okay, deal. From yes. What the F, Frankie Podcast, great listener, great collector. Great stakeholder in the hobby. If card values were tied to stats and performance, accomplishments, and championships, what do you think some of the top valued cards would be?
Woo. Nice.
There we go.
We're just talking like players.
Yes. Well, or their particular cards. That's the other half. You have the player and you have the card.
Mm. I have this new thing, this theory I'm working on, where the amount that I trust an individual person is the likelihood that they will admit to me they don't know the answer to something. Mm. Think about that.
It's good. It's a little bit tough because, like, it takes a level of maturity and experience to be able to be comfortable saying I don't know. So it's like it's trustworthiness and it's maturity that test is measured.
Yeah. Well, the number one factor of trust for me is the maturity of the person.
Yeah, that works.
So it's a theory I'm working on, and I'm going to flex that right now. I have no idea.
Nice. Paradoxically, by not answering, he is giving a great answer.
It's mostly because we're getting towards the end and I'm tired. How about that?
That is, hey, look, we love transparency in this hobby.
I just feel like all the fancy influencers just have to have an answer. You just gotta make it up. It's fine. Just keep moving forward. Make up an answer.
That's a great point, especially in the hobby where like no person has encyclopedic knowledge of every era, or even of many eras, or even one era, you know, like we talked about, like the licensing issues on the Joe Montana, which is the rookie, you know, that was like a thing that we talked about maybe a year ago, maybe a little bit less. I don't remember any of that. And I was researching it for like an hour before the show. So there's almost like a pointlessness to like, look, if it's a card that I care about and I love and I'm passionate about, I will know, probably. Or I'll at least be able to point in the direction of a resource. But man, there's so much knowledge you have that is just, it's way better to say I don't know. Way better for everybody involved.
Or just be like, I'll look it up later. I'm not sure. I forget.
Or even better, here's how you can look it up.
Let me Google that for you.
Yes, remember that site? That was a great site. All right. I'll read this question. Maybe we'll end with this one. And this will be a shout-out. I like this question because it's a shout-out to another great show. So Drake's PC says, Stacking Slabs and Carlson Cards had a great conversation today around first-year Panini Select Golds. While the first year of a product, insert, or parallel is notable, what are some sets or cards that you love more in later years of the set and the card rather than the first year, and why?
Did this come from Drake?
Yep.
Did I miss that?
Come from Drake.
I like a lot of post-rookie cards better than rookie, just like visually, you know? But I always have to take into account the importance of the card and stuff, so it is hard to like eventually overtake the rookie, but for the first year of something. But I like a lot of them, so I don't know. That one is like the 2013 Select. That's the first of that, I guess. I don't know, that just isn't like one that stands out to me as like, yes, I know that's the first versus like 2012 Prism. Maybe it's because it's a year after 2012 Prism.
Yeah, it's tricky too because if memory serves, 2012 Prism and 2012 Select both exist for basketball. 2012 Prism exists for football, but Select football didn't come along until 2013.
Gotcha.
So but yeah, I mean, we've had questions about first in recent episodes on this show, and first matter, and we've gone over that thanks to a great question from Cardi C, and it's just the significance of a first is a pretty easy fallback position when you're explaining something to somebody. Well, why do you like this one? It's the first. There's significance there. There's a built-in significance factor, and then you have to reach if you want to explain why something that's not the first is still better for aesthetics or because of a better rookie class. You have to reach. And when you really boil it all down, significance is such a big trump card. It just is to me. So I can say this, Drake. As I evolved as a collector, I'm not sure if I still agree with this anymore, but for a long time, I liked the 1998 rubies better than the 1997. The 1998 star rubies I liked better than the 1997 star rubies. Felt that way for a long time. Because I thought it looked better and just seemed cooler and whatever. But 1997 star rubies being the first star rubies numbered to 50, it's got some appeal to it, you know. I think the thing that can knock a first off of its, that can knock it down a peg, is when like a later issue, like to your point, Josh, when a later issue just looks so much better.
Yeah.
If I really like the way it looks better, and even better, if there's a consensus opinion that the later one looks better.
It's like how 96 has rubies and PMGs, but they're not numbered, and we just like immediately, that doesn't even count. Like they're not even the same. It's technically the same name, but that's about it. So we just like make 97 in the first year of those.
For sure. All right, that's going to do it for the questions. Cool questions this week. Let's pick a title. I've heard a lot. The first one from today is when.
This is going to be easy, but I love to relive these.
I like the, yeah, this is just the recap. This is the recap.
The weird, the world's weirdest recap.
Please. You sing the lowest proclaim the recap.
Yeah. I can't sing that the way Big Rangs can sing that. All right. Please consult your tax professional. That's an evergreen title. fair weather fan. We done been upended. A lot of balls in the air.
That was yours.
Yep. They never sound good out of context.
Or they sound even better.
They do. All right. A few years of awkwardness. We are not an advice show. Baptized in the hype. Where the Lord of the Rings light is pointing.
Christina, you know what I'm saying on that one? I just didn't say it right.
I like that one. I don't know Lord of the Rings, so I don't know if that's accurate, but I like how that's...
Ask her if she knows what I'm talking about.
Something about the Eye of Sauron. She says she understood what you meant. Okay.
Yes.
The hobby's chicken or the egg?
These are so good without context. I just...
Pick the bone. the starving collector.
I like that one. It's just like, what the heck are you talking about? But it made sense at the time.
It did. Here we go. Pending optimism and bull signals. And finally, name this bucket.
Is there a bowl emoji?
There may be.
Because you could do pending optimism and then do like the stock chart going up.
Are we going then, for two emojis here?
And then do and bull signals with the, if you could do like a bull emoji or yeah, no, I don't know if there's one.
All right, well, we'll see what I find when I go to titles. All right, see you guys next week.
Hopefully.
See why CardLadder is the most respected sports card analytics app on the market. We have virtually every card in our system. If the card you are looking for ever sold on one of these platforms, you can find it using CardLadder's sales history. Easily find recent comps and get a better estimate what your cards are worth. See why CardLadder is the most trusted and the most reliable sports card analytics app on the market. We know what you want. Because CardLadder was created by collectors for collectors. Join the innovators, not the imitators. CardLadder, constantly innovating. Try it for free. See why CardLadder is the industry leader in sports card data. CardLadder, we're just getting started.